Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Morgan, and I am an alcoholic.
Good morning.
Hello, everybody. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. So out that door, a little bit to your left, and you'll see the little set of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. Can everybody hear me all right? Do I need to get closer? I got you. Thank you. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing Steps 8 and 9, Part 2, so it's mostly Step 9. And please welcome our panel this evening, Debbie and Bob. All right, so I will read the first paragraph on page 80, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Right. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Whichever one of y'all wants to start, you rock, paper, scissors, or...
I'll go. Hi, I'm Debbie Singster. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 30th, 2006, and I am truly grateful. My home group is Speaking of Steps in Richmond, Virginia, and I'm really happy to be here. I've known Morgan since he first got sober, and we just had a moment together. It just hit me. He's really good friends with my son, and yeah, I'm killing some time on this one. And this is really cool. We went and said the third step prayer before we began, and I just right now started crying to see him from when he came in and to see him chairing a meeting like this and doing the deal and having a sponsor. It just really, just the miracle of this program and the transformation that happens as a result of doing the steps, and especially 8-9, which I think I'm supposed to be talking about. I don't have a lot to add on this. There was definitely domestic troubles in my home. I was not mixed up with any women or men. I was laid up in drunk around the clock and loaded up on lots of benzos, so I wasn't really interested in anything like that. But I did do a I know lots of people that were, and it's so much where I sponsor a lot of people. I'm like, God, that was, sounds like so much fun. I just was, you know, in psych wards and pathetic and no fun at all, you know. But hats off to the people that could go out and cat around, man. That must have been fun. But certainly, you know, I wore people out, and there were definitely domestic troubles. I was not able to clearly be a, you know, good member of the household. My son, when I got sober, the damage I did there, I'd gotten sober. I'd been sober for 6 years, so he's like 2 or 3 when I got sober and relapsed, and he was like 10, and my husband was working out of the country, and I was supposed to take care of our son, and I was in a, you know, after a relapse, I was in a blackout the entire summer. He had no supervision. He was a skateboarder, fell and hit his head, and I drove around just drunk with kids all the time, and you know, spent lots of money I didn't have, and just, you know, created all kinds of havoc and worried my husband to death. He'd gotten this great job out in Vancouver, British Columbia, and Maui, and was having to fly home every month to take care of me. So, you know, so there was a lot of stuff that I did, and I think more of it I can share, you know, in some of the other things that it might be more appropriate, but you know, I did, there was a lot of resentment, a lot of harm, but from my point of view, you know, I was, and I see this a lot, people that are new, until you get, you know, get a good sponsor, work through the steps and get to step 9, ain't it great that I'm just not drinking? You know, I can't see the ripple effect and the damage and the gravity of that, and I can't understand why people are just being so mean to me, you know, and so, you know, thank God for the steps in order, and over time going through the book, when you get to that 8, you know, which is where I got to after doing the inventory, is really come face to face and making that list of the harms based on my inventory and anything else, and getting to own that in my soul and be prepared to go out and amend that and start cleaning that mess up, and then continuing to put the nail in the coffin of living out those amends with 10, 11, 12. But that's all I've got to share on this for right now. Thanks.
Thanks, Deb. I'm Bob Sangster, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bob.
I'm sobriety. Can you guys hear me? No?
Yeah, he talks.
Okay. My sobriety date is February 20th of 2000. My home group is the Common Solution Group in Richmond, Virginia. I have a sponsor, and I have the honor and privilege of sponsoring guys in this program. Oh, let me see. So Deb told you that she had gotten sober and then had a relapse. But before that happened, before she had that relapse, I'd gotten sober. But before I'd gotten sober, I can remember a few incidents that where the home wasn't very happy because I was drinking. And I'd come home and, you know, she didn't want me to drink in the house, and I could not do that. So I had it hidden in the garage. I had it hidden above the utility room cabinets and in my car. And when I try not to drink, I'll give you an example. I was sitting on the hearth of the fireplace. And she looked at me and said, "You're so restless, irritable, and discontent. Just have a drink." And so I just, you know, I got a relief just from knowing I could have a drink. So I run down to the garage and I fill up the stadium cup of vodka on the rocks and take a few big gulps, and she described it like flicking a light switch. Suddenly, I was tolerable to be around, mm-hmm. where before she couldn't stand me. I couldn't stand me. So that was creating troubles, right? Another time I went to bed, I went to get in her bed, I was drunk and I was trying to snuggle up. She was having no parts of it. And I got a big expletive and spiritual book goes flying across the room, and I want a divorce. You know, those things happened. And that's not what I wanted. And she said that's not what she wanted. But those were the things that led up to me finally hitting a bottom. As far as the other domestic problems, I sponsor a lot of guys that had domestic problems. I sponsor a lot of guys that had really bad marriages. You know, part of it was them sometimes, and other times it wasn't. What it says in our book, though, in dealing with those things, is that we don't unnecessarily harm someone else, right? And we don't disclose things that would do that. So anyway, that's all I got on this. Thanks.
All right, thank you. All right, the next reading is on page 82. Well, yours says 81. Next reading is on page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?"
Okay. So, I like to say, I think tornado is too kind of a word. I was like a Category 5 hurricane roaring through the lives of others. I mean, I was just so selfish and so, I mean, I was just not in this world. And, oh, you can't hear me? Okay. And, again, I'm going to go back to, in case somebody hasn't gone to step 9 and you feel this way, I want you to relate. You know, I couldn't see it when I first, came in and, going to meetings, even the first 6 months, being able to see, and I think God's so merciful, or this power is so merciful, because I just couldn't handle all of me to see the damage I had done. And really, even when I, got sober in 2006, and by the time, it was within 4 to 6 months that I was at my ninth step in amends, I don't think I saw the gravity of the harms I had really done. It's happened over time, but you have to start somewhere. So I, got sober in May of 2006, proceeded through the steps with my sponsor, and wrote that inventory, and I was like, after relapse and almost done, I'm like, I'm taking this for real. I mean, I am serious, and I wanted to know, and I had a great experience with the inventory and really seeing what it looks like, you know, as what my alcoholism, drunk or sober, looks like. And then making that 8-step list, and again, oh my God, you know, under the guidance of a sponsor, you know, because let me just back up, you know, when I first tried to get sober again in 2005 and couldn't, I wanted to run out and make amends to all my family members and everyone to get them to speak to me again, and it didn't go over well, and I ended up staying drunk, man. I just, you know, so... So this time I had to set aside all my feelings and the people and all that and just trust the process and take the steps and make the list and pray about it. But, you know, I got to a part where, you know, there was a lot of power in owning that stuff and seeing who and what I really am and what I'm capable of with a tremendous desire to be changed, but it didn't happen overnight. But, you know, I got to see this tornado and see that, you know, where is it? That sobriety is just not enough. That, you know, living this is a way of life, going in and making those amends the best I can, and not worrying about the outcome and letting go and trusting that decision I made in step two, that God's either everything or he's nothing, and trusting the process and having a good sponsor, you know. But this story is coming to me. I just want to tell it real quickly because there's more stuff I can share on my 9-step process. But my son is sober, and he's 6 years sober August 4th. And so he got the brunt of my alcoholism when his dad was out of town. And, you know, of course, I made amends to him and all that. And the first time I got to hear him tell his story, I got the full gravity of what I'm capable of. And I get to own it. And these are partly tears of joy. He talked about how, you know, he had grown up in AA, and his mother had been sober, and his dad was sober, and his mom relapsed. And he talked about how I terrified him. And you mamas know, and he's my only child, and my world revolves around him. I'm trying to leave him alone. He's a grown man now, but, you know, I just love him. He's my baby. And I terrified the thing I love the most in the world. That's, you know, how do you make that right? Well, I've been able to make that right. We have a great relationship. But I was so grateful to hear that, because I thought, yeah, I kind of scared him. And I was like, no, I terrified him. So I'm just grateful for this process. I'll pass to Bob.
Okay. I'll give you an example of before I got sober. I'll never forget this. I was sitting at our table in this breakfast area, and it was open up to a den. And I had passed out, like, in midstream, sitting there eating. And the fork and knife were, like, still in my hands, and I was like this. And she's, you know, talked about her son, and he was like, Mommy, why is Daddy sitting over there like that? I literally passed out sitting at the table. And so a lot of what I did besides that was basically avoiding family. I avoided my mom and stepdad. I avoided my father, my brothers and sisters, except for my sister who liked to drink a lot. We got along great, but I avoided the other part of the family, the big part of my family. And I earlier on, before Deb and I had gotten married, I even moved like way out so that it would be like a 40-minute drive for them at the time. And so they wouldn't just pop in. They'd call before they made that sort of a trip. And I avoided things other than, you know, I'd be there at Christmas, that sort of thing. I'd be there for somebody's birthday. I could stay straight long enough to do that and get out. And so I wasn't really a participating member in my family. And I've got some great brothers and sisters. You know, those things have all changed. But instead of excluding people, this process has helped me to include people. And so, I mean, that's my responsibility, not theirs. You know, and by reaching out to them, by being a part of family decisions and that sort of thing that I used to avoid, you know, our family's a lot closer, much closer. I mean, I get text messages from my brothers and sisters every single day, sometimes too many, you know, but I love them, and I'm glad that I'm the only one that did that, not them. Thanks.
All right. So we will be continuing on page 83. Yes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. And my sponsor was, you know, it says we must take the lead. Let me just say, where it says a remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't feel the bill at all. Thank God for the sponsors I've had. And as far as going through this process of, you know, actually making the formal amends, and I pretty much have taken this out of my vocabulary. In making the amends, I was always instructed, one of my sponsors, who was kind of mean, not mean, she's very honest and I love her, she said, "You've been sorry all your life, so we're not going to say sorry," because it's always like, I'm sorry. You know, after making that list and we went over the 8-step list, we practiced, and basically, you know, it was, you know, I went to someone and said, you know, after we had agreed on meeting and all that, you know, I was wrong. I harmed you. And this is, you know, some of the things that I've done. Is there anything else I've done to harm you? Or that you need to tell me? I am ready to hear it. And then they'll either say something or they won't. And I get to sit there and listen. What a humbling experience. And then, is there anything I can do to make it right? Rather than me going like, I'm a piddly alcoholic. You know, I've been drinking for the past 10 years. I've been in and out of the psych wards. And I didn't mean to be bad. And I'm sorry. And, you know, because that's normally what I would do. I would have, you know, a long list of excuses for the, you know, for why I behave the way I do, of the way I was raised or blah, 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 or whatever. And that just was so much freedom and empowerment of, I'm owning this stuff. I was wrong. I was, you know, I was not a very good daughter. I wasn't a good mother. You know, whoever I'm making the amends to, you didn't deserve that. And, you know, this is how I see I've harmed you. Please let me know. So that was very powerful starting out with that. But also this long period of reconstruction, you know, with my family members, like my sisters and my mother, they're all active alcoholics. Well, one, my oldest sister is 2 years sober. She finally got sober at 61. But it was really tough, you know. I mean, you know, but I had to, you know, see where I was wrong. And I really didn't want to have a relationship with them. I mean, everybody in my family's alcoholic. But, you know, I own my part of the deal. And so I had the one sister that I'd been closest to through the years we used to drink together, and then through my alcoholism. It's funny, when people are active alcoholics in the family dynamic, and one gets sober, all the other ones try to convince you you're really not an alcoholic. They didn't like it that I got sober. And so that, and they'd always put down AA, and you don't need those people, and your daddy went to AA, and they're up in your business. And, you know, after I kept drinking and almost dying, I'm like, you know, I really don't care what they think about it, and I need this. But so I made amends and started, you know, that path. And my one sister, that we were very, very close, you know, I made some amends to her. And I thought they went well. She heard me, and, you know. So over the next year, I would talk to my mom, and she'd say, I don't know what you did to your sister, but she hates you. Every time I talk to her, she, you know, she's saying how much she hates you. And I'm like, but I thought our amends went so well. So finally one day I called her and said, hey, you know, I thought we were okay. And, you know, is there something else? And there was. There was something she said that I said that I, so evidently I was in a blackout. It was something I can't even imagine that I would say to her daughter. It was totally inappropriate. But, you know, as a blackout drinker. So I owned it, and I told her, is there anything I can do to make it right? She said, no, some things are just unforgivable. And I'm like, okie dokie. And so, you know, I was very sad, but I got off the phone. I was like, hey, I've done what I can do. God's in charge. So I continue to, you know, try to, you know, have the, you know, rebuilding of a healthy relationship with my family as best as I could, with my, you know, family of origin. And about a year later, she called me and was like, are y'all gonna come down to Florida to see us? So we now have a great relationship. I'm now, the mother I wouldn't talk to, that wouldn't talk to me, the other sister, the two other sisters, it's kind of like I've become the go-to. I'm power of attorney for two of them, and one of them calls me all the time, and we have a very loving, I mean, it's just amazing to me. It really is, but it was a long period of time for that to happen. And so I do understand that long period of reconstruction. And you know, it's you know, this thing where their defects may be glaring, you know, I've been told that's none of my business. I mean, what I've learned is, you know, through this process is I'm responsible for me, I'm not responsible for you. Everything within the hula hoop's my business. Everything out of it's not my business. You know, if I'm wrong, I have a step for that. If I'm not, I can let you be, you know, that type of thing. So that's been good in, you know, letting people be. And I have to ask God to show me on a daily basis, because I'm just not a naturally spiritual, nice person. I mean, I like people and everything, but I'm just, you know, this patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. So thank God for the 11th step. You know, God, please show me how to do that. And I'm always willing. And so spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. So, you know, for me, that is living the 12 steps in my life as a way of life, accepting my humanness, and really living in 10, 11, and 12, you know, and really actually doing that. And then I'm, you know, got this path, a spiritual path, and I mess up. But, you know, there's sponsorship and the steps and, you know, the relationship with the higher power. But, yeah, and so this talk incessantly about spiritual matters, the only spiritual matters I need to be concerned about are my own. What other people do is really none of my business, you know. And through the years when I would have a problem with him or whatever, or, you know, I'd call my sponsor, and she would say things like, well, if someone's acting like that, they're maybe not in a good place, so you get to be the sober one, you know. And, you know, just a lot of great advice on, you know, I'm responsible for me, not you, and everybody has the right to have a bad day, you know, not just me. So that's all I got on it. Thanks.
Thanks, Beth. I'm alcoholic. And my first sponsor gave me some really good direction. And one of the things he said early on, before I even got to the amends or anything, was if I did something and I realized that it was wrong, I was to step up and say that. I was wrong for this. What would you have me do to make it right? The first time I exercised that, I spoke harshly to my wife in a loud voice. And I don't recall what it was about. I was really early in sobriety. But in like a couple of minutes, I realized I needed to go make that right. And I went to her and I said, you know, I was really wrong to have spoken to you that way. What would you have me do to make it right? And she said, I just asked you to try not to be that way. And what I saw from that was, instead of the relationship going this way, and, you know, maybe cold shoulder from each of us for a day or two, we were back on the same path. So that was a really good tool to just own it right then. He also had me write out my eight step, every single thing, you know, I did this, this, and this. I was selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, afraid. And then I was supposed to say, and I had to write all of this out, and I was supposed to say, is there anything else I've done to harm you? And then he said, pause. That means I'm supposed to listen. And so I did that for every single amends. As far as the family, when I made amends to my mom and stepdad, they didn't really know what had been going on. They were surprised. They did not know. And like I told you earlier, you know, I lived a distance from them. And so, I mean, it really wasn't a whole lot other than they wanted to have a relationship, and they wanted me to be the son they raised me to be, and that sort of thing. And I did that, you know, until they passed. With my dad, my biological dad, my mom and dad had split up when I was 2. I swore I'd never be like him. He was a drunk. He was a big partier all of his life. And I cut him out of my life. Didn't include him in anything. And when I got sober and got to the step, that's what I'd done. I cut him out. That's where I was wrong. And at the time, our son was the only grandchild that he had. So it was a while after I'd gotten sober. I mean, probably over a year, I think, when he lived out in the western part of Virginia. He'd moved out there to take care of his mom, my grandmother, who I loved to death. And we went out to visit. Called, made a time, went out to visit. And so I was going to make my amends to him, and I needed to find a place that we could get away from, you know, the others that were there. So we went to he wanted to take and show me this mountain spring. So we're riding up there, and I start getting ready to make my amends to him. And he goes, hold on, I got sober in AA. I had no clue. No clue. And all he wanted was to be included. You know? So we have included him. You know, he's the dad that I never thought he could be. He's a grandfather I never imagined he could be. I wouldn't have found that out had I not followed my sponsor's directions and done that. Because I just did not want to be like him. And and I felt there were some wrongs that I could never forgive. And that's just nonsense, because everything's forgiven. So that's the power of the step. On another one, I have an ex-wife that I have a son with. And so I was told to, you know, call and try to make amends. I called and told her I'd like to make amends. I don't want to hear it. I called again later. I don't want to hear it. And so I was told after that second time to just say, you know, I am ready and willing to do this at any time that you were ready. So just let me know. So I was sitting in my office one day, and she comes barging in the office. I said, I'm ready to hear those amends. And so I was ready. I knew exactly what I was to say. Like I told you, I had to write out everything, and I knew exactly what to say. And I told her, you know, what I'd done, and I was selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, afraid. And I asked if there's anything else I've done to harm you. And I listened for 45 minutes. Truly. And I only thought I knew the harm that I caused her. But I got to hear from her perspective. And her perspective is her reality. And that's what I had to focus on. And I had to focus on what she asked me to do to make those things right. And as it turned out, everything became about our son and us being good parents to him. I mean, she had remarried. And so all that animosity was, the energy was turned towards being good parents, co-parents, talking about things. And I mean, she'd even come by the house and give Deb a big hug. I mean, everything changed. But I didn't push it. You know, that was the big thing. I had to wait until she was ready. It's not for me to feel better. It's for me to make things right. And it's not my timetable. Yeah, I'd like to get it all done right now, but some people just aren't ready. She wasn't. And by waiting for that, that happened. My oldest son, that she's his mom, still to this day has not wanted to hear my amends. That's okay. That's okay. You know, I was a good dad to him, still try to be a good dad to him, but he does not want to hear my amends. Nothing I can do about it. I can't force it on somebody. I think that's all I have on that. Thanks.
All right. Continuing on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
So by having that list that I made in step 8, I've owned all my harms. So at that point, you know, I have that, and I don't know what's going to happen in 9, but like Bob said, I'm prepared because I've made the list. My sponsor's taken off the ones that I don't have any business, you know, making amends or whatever. You know, we've gone through it, made sure it's a good list, and, you know, I've been as honest as possible and covered everything. So for me, I didn't want to postpone. I was ready and willing to do them all, but, you know, just like Bob gave the example of his ex, which she didn't want to talk to me, and we eventually got to make those amends, and that was great. But, you know, for example, people that passed on, So what do you do? So, you know, my father had passed, and so I wrote a letter and to him, and said, and I happened to have some of his ashes, and was able to sit with that and read my amends and just pray, you know, and that was cool, you know. I've directed other people to do that. That I've sponsored, you know, and again, there might be postponement, not on your part, you know, but on the other person's part, because it's not ready. But I'm ready and willing to do that. And sometimes it happens for a reason. Or also, you know, in sponsoring other people and working with them on it, sometimes if somebody's still really burning from what you did to them, it's, you know, it says we need to be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble, you know. So sometimes it's sensible not to walk into a fire and do more damage. And also the other thing is, I think it said one of the other things, we don't go on about spiritual matters and all that. You know, when I've, you know, made amends to people that, like an ex-boss or something, I'll go like, oh, yeah, I'm, you know, I don't drag them through my alcoholism. You know, I have a drinking problem, part of this, you know, I'm here, you know, to make amends, explain to them in layman's terms. And, you know, and I don't go with a lot of drama and, you know, in and out of psych wards and all the stuff. It's like, hey, I wasn't a good employee. You know, here's some things I've done to you. You know, is there anything else I've done? What can I do to make it right? And so I like this, you know, as God's people, we stand on our feet. I don't crawl before anyone, and I don't do that in a superior, like, I'm sober in AA, look at me. It's owning my stuff and amending it, and what you do with that's God's business, not mine. And I've just found this process, you know, a lot of people are like, oh my God, I'm so scared, and, you know, I'm afraid to write my four step, and I'm afraid to do a fifth step, and I'm afraid to do the ninth step. I'm like, oh my God, you better be scared if you don't. I mean, it's such, you know, Jesus, it's like we get to face and be rid of the things that are blocking me from God, from the light, from living a good life, and getting to clean up this big mess I've been carrying in my cloak of self-pity and depression, and get to take that thing off and, you know, stand tall. And you know, it says we're reborn. And I really feel, some days I don't feel that way. Some days I'm like, oh my God, have I ever worked a step? But it doesn't matter what I think, feel, or believe. It matters what I'm doing and what I'm willing to do. But, you know, and it says there's some wrongs we can never fully right. You know, and I know Bob's, I mean, we know people that have killed people, and they've made that right in their soul, and it's something they get to use to help a lot of people. You know, I've seen some very tragic things with folks that have risen above by using this process, stay in the middle of the circle triangle of Alcoholics Anonymous and having people to walk with. I've seen tragedies become treasures in helping God's kids. I mean, it's amazing to me, you know, how this process works. There's nothing scary about it. It's just wonderful. It repairs relationships. It gets me right to be able to go out and do the work to help God's kids, because, you know, I have a mess of a life, and I take it through this process, and I have a message of depth and weight that there's somebody that needs my help, and God gets to choose that. And then you get to take this dusty past, you know, and connect with a person on a spiritual level where they know you know how they feel, you know, and that's where hope is born, and that hopelessness of my mess and their mess, and I'm like, hey, you know, I understand, and this is what I did. And you know, there's some things I just have to live with. I can't go out and have a little checklist like, okay, I made all my amends, now I'm great. No, I have to continue living this as a way of life to keep Because certainly I've had lots, I probably had more amends in the past 12 and a half years of being sober than I did before. You know, thank God for step 10. But, you know, I live it as a way of life, so I get to catch all those things. So there's some things, because I was so messed up for so many years and out of it, you know, things that come to me, you know, years later that they were just gone. I mean, you know, like those cringe moments, like, oh my God, I did that. And then I could make those right, get with my sponsor and take a look at it. But anyway, you know, and again, as far as the ones that won't see me, I've already gotten right with God on it. I've taken it through the process, and if there's ever opportunity, I'm ready. And, you know, those are some of them I get to live with, and I'm okay with that because I have a process that helps me with that. So, and a God.
Thanks, Deb. Yeah. I think she's covered that one.
Okay. All right, our last reading is on page 83 as well. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All of these promises have come true in my life. Absolutely. No question about it. And what I found is that when it talks about our experience can benefit others. So it's not how great my life is, because it is great to me, but it's the problems and difficulties that I've had while drinking and even while sober that are the experience that I can share with someone else that's going through a similar situation. You know, it's not my perfectness by any stretch of the imagination that I can help someone. It's by the difficulties I've had. And what did I do? I mean, that's what my sponsor shares with me, is that experience. And what he did to get through that. The feeling of economic insecurity. Been through that in sobriety. Right? I came back from that great job she was talking about in Vancouver, and we were trying to figure out, what are we going to do now? You know, but my place was to be back home. So things worked out. We had faith that they're going to work out. I put one foot in front of the other, and things will work out. And they have. I've taken jobs I didn't want to take. I've done all sorts of things. Things worked out. Things worked out better than I could have planned. I couldn't have imagined I'd be doing what I'm doing today. That's it's so fulfilling, and it's been a great opportunity that kind of came from just trying to be helpful. You know, trying to be helpful. So the self-seeking still crop up, yes. But what do I do when it happens? You know, I ask God to remove it. And usually my sponsor will help me identify it when it's cropping up and I'm telling him what's going on. You know? I need that outside look as to what's going on with me. you know, I get a lot of whys and this, that type of stuff, and I answer those questions, and I get some good orderly direction. You know, I've had several sponsors in my sobriety. One of them passed away. It's great, great man. And I've gotten so much from each one of them that all of these things have happened in my life. I wouldn't trade it for anything. Thanks.
I think I kind of covered this part of the last one. I got a little carried away, but let's see. I first came in AA in 96. I was here for about a year and a half. And I've heard those, I want those promises. And so I thought I was smarter than everyone, and I didn't really need to do all the work. So I kind of halfway show up at meetings and halfway work the steps. And then I wanted the happy, joyous, and free, and none of it happened. So AA doesn't work, so I went and drank. So then I was out for 11 months and got my butt kicked and came back. And like, what y'all say now? And same thing happened again. I think at 2.5, 3.5 years, I just went, I'm like, God, AA works great for drinking, my drinking problem, but there is something else going on here. And so went off on this search to try to fix myself, you know, because I want these promises. And I think I'd intellectualize this thing. I don't know, I just got crazy and end up drinking after 6 years. So when I came back here, I really looked at what's in the book, and I'm not smarter. I got dumbed down. I just became willing. I didn't believe in AA. I didn't believe in God. Didn't believe in nothing. But I was out of ideas, and I was willing to look at what it says in the book, and it does apply to me, and be willing to take the actions. Not expect. I didn't. My only expectation when I came back May 30th, 2006. I thought I was going to have to die from drinking. I wanted to stay sober, not drinking long enough to change my will so he couldn't get anything, and write a letter to my son to explain to him why I could no longer live in this world. That's all I wanted. I didn't want happy, joyous, and free. I didn't want nothing. And I just day in, day out took the actions and the guidance of a good sponsor. And lo and behold, you know, here I am. And so I have a whole new, you know, understanding of these promises that we get. You know, there's a lot of promises throughout the book. You know, these are the ones we read at most of the meetings, but there's a lot of negative promises, which I experience, and, you know, other promises. But again, I have had glimpses of these types of things, you know, of certainly not regretting the past and wish to shut the door on it. That is my greatest asset here in helping others. You know, I've had some serenity and peace, but depends on, you know, anyway. You know, and we can see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. You know, do I totally not have self-pity? No. But I have plenty of things. If I'm staying here in the middle of the circle, the triangle, in all three parts of AA, and being sponsored and helping God's kids, I don't have time to be in self-pity. You know, we go to meetings, and I'm like, whoa, it's me. So I get my nice car and drive down the street. And then I get to the meeting. There's some gal that doesn't have a car, lost her kids, and is dying from alcoholism. I'm like, you know, so I have great opportunities to pull my tail in out of, you know, where, and I'm not going to cuss. But, you know, so my whole attitude and outlook upon life has changed as a result of staying here. And I guess the thing is that, you know, like Bob said, it's not how great, it's not on the outside getting stuff. It's, man, I can have a horrible day, and my cat can die, and my nephew died, and I don't drink over that. You know, life is life, man. I mean, so one thing that's happened through this process is I've gotten to accept the human reality. I mean, I don't like sober reality, but here I've gotten to have this spiritual process that helps me live in this world, accept my humanness, and I have these spiritual tools to use in people to walk through with me and guide me. But, you know, one of the things that says, you know, they're being fulfilled among us, these extravagant promises, But it says they'll always materialize if we work for them. And then right after that it says, this thought brings us to step 10. You know, so for me to even think about having any of these promises up and running in my life, I've got to do the deal. You know, I can't stop at, oh, I've made my amends. I'm going to go. I see it happen all the time. I'm good now. Thanks for the help. I got to go be a good mom and put more, you know, work harder, make money and get a big house and, you know, all that stuff. And then, you know, the promises definitely go away. But I've got to continue living all the steps in my life to continue to get, even have a chance at having these promises up and running on any given day in my life. But I'm very, very grateful, and that's all I have to share on that. And I think it's time for me to share.
That's okay. Thank you. Thank you guys so much. All right. We are now going to pass the baskets. The Seven Traditions states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? I've got one. Oh, I can't see. You go first.
It's Sterling.
It's Sterling.
November 1st, Thursday, November 1st, from 7 to 9 p.m., Downtown Young and Sober is having its 14th anniversary. 7 p.m. potluck and an 8 p.m. speaker. Bring a dish if you wish.
Thank you.
Thanks. I'm Deborah. I'm an alcoholic.
Deborah.
There is a new community meeting in Northbrook Wednesday. It's at 12 o'clock. It's a Seven Tradition meeting out of the 12 and 12 at 520 Graydon Avenue, also known as Sacred Heart Church. Thanks.
Thanks.
All right, and I'm still Morgan. I'm still an alcoholic. And we have this beautiful, awesome event coming up. November 12th, we've got a supper and a speaker. Most of you have been to one before, but if you haven't, you are missing out big time. We have Merv from Charlottesville, Virginia coming. We're going to have 6 p.m. Potluck. Bring a dish if you wish. And we're going to have a 7 p.m. speaker meeting. We have these beautiful fall-colored pumpkin orange flyers, and there's plenty of them right there if you would like to take them back to your groups. I highly encourage you to take one for you and your friends and your meetings. So, yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Morgan.
Right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise their hands? Right. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Yay. Hi, my name is Andrea. I'm an alcoholic.
Andrea,
welcome.
Good one.
Brian, alcoholic.
Hey, Brian, welcome.
Kenny, alcoholic.
Hi, Kenny, welcome.
I feel like there's probably one or two more now, maybe. All right. Literature is available over here to my right, your left. Books are available. Price is inside. If you can fold it, it's free. See a home group member if you need something. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be right here at this table, not going to move. After the meeting, please feel free to come talk to me. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, let's thank the panel again. And please feel free to come thank them after. It's always nice. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, which is on 22nd and Colonial. I have asked a friend to read the last two paragraphs on 164.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is David.
David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Right, thanks, Dave. Nice way of closing.
You're welcome.
Chair. Oh,
yeah.
So much.